This podcast is brought to you in part by Contact My Politician, a free, fast way to find your local and national politicians and to keep them accountable. Click on their banner at our website, michaelmedved.com.
Now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Another great week. In fact, it is Thanksgiving week. And yes, Thanksgiving is allowed, but it's frowned upon by lots and lots of Native American activists. We will talk about this lengthy New York Times piece about reconsidering the myth of Thanksgiving. We'll also talk about restrictions that are supposed to be placed upon the Thanksgiving holiday because of the upsurge in the coronavirus. We have the opportunity today to speak to three of the smartest conservatives out there, really. One of them, Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center, about what's going on in our state with this new round of restrictions. Now, get it clear, I am not one of those conservatives who believes for a moment, and I don't think Todd Myers is either. He is the science director for the Washington Policy Center. But I don't believe for a moment that COVID-19 is a hoax, or that it's nothing, or it's a mild flu, or it's a mild annoyance. It's very serious. It can be very deadly. And we're going into a difficult time. But what can our governments do, really, to make it better? And are these lockdowns being competently and productively handled? We will get to that on the Michael Medved Show. We'll also be speaking with Andy McCarthy, one of the sharpest legal thinkers out there, about the ultimate Trump strategy in fighting this election duel. It's a strategy that says we're going to go right around, just right behind, however the votes were counted, and go to Republican state legislatures and get them to put forward a slate of Republican electors. That's more than clear than ever before. That's the strategy the Trump administration. He met on Friday with leaders of the Michigan state legislature. Does this have any chance of working at all? Is it constitutionally appropriate? We'll talk about that with former federal prosecutor and a senior editor at National Review, Andy McCarthy. And then we talked to another editor at National Review, Kevin Williamson, who has a new report on a big white ghetto. Why is it that he says that a big part of the country, big chunk of the country, right in the middle, is like an Indian reservation or like a gigantic urban ghetto, except far worse off? And what can we do about it? We will get to that as well on the Medved Show. But first up, some of the material on the coronavirus. There's no question that around the world, it's very serious. The vaccines cannot come riding to the rescue right now. It'll be a while, but that's encouraging news. But Oregon Governor Kate Brown, who actually presided over something that I think is pretty wise, which is cleanup of a major homeless encampment. We'll get to that. But she urges residents to take matters into their own hands if they see their neighbors, friends, family members violating some of the shutdown restrictions. Listen, this is clip four.
Do you want people calling the police on their neighbors, not emergency lines or 911?
Look, this is no different than what happens if there's a party down the street and it's keeping everyone awake. What do neighbors do? They call law enforcement because it's too noisy.
That could be a yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay. You want neighbors to snitch on their neighbors and call the police? Do the police really want to handle it that way? I mean, don't they have enough to do to keep the nightly, daily demonstrators and protesters in the city of Portland from destroying even more of the city of Portland than they have. I mean, if you're a police officer and let's say you spot in your neighbor's home, they have a large group for Thanksgiving. I know it's horrifying, but it can happen. And I don't want to make light of this. We're trying to follow the rules. We are having a very small group. We're having a grand total of one, two, three, five people, five adults and a baby for Thanksgiving. And that's immediate family. And I think that's okay. It's a household and it's been part of our quarantine. And we're trying to be careful. But really? You should report it to the police to crack down on shutdown violators? In fact, there was some talk in the state of New Jersey that the police were not going to enforce restrictions on Thanksgiving. And this became an item of conversation. This is clip 8 between George Stephanopoulos on ABC TV and the Democratic governor of New Jersey, Phil Murphy. Listen.
Is the virus outstripping your efforts to control it?
George, good to be with you. I certainly hope not. But we do have some realities that are stark. Number one, the weather is colder. We're living a lot more of our lives indoors. There's real pandemic fatigue and a lot of transmission behind private doors. So we have surgically gone after cutting indoor dining at 10 p.m., lowering indoor gathering limits to 10 people. We've amped up enforcement, but there is only so much you can do. So we're pleading with people, keep Thanksgiving really small, immediate family, don't travel, and don't let your guard down just because you're at home.
Yeah, we just heard that police chief say he's not going to enforce these new rules. Anything you can do about that?
Listen, I heard him say, I don't want to ruin anyone's Thanksgiving. And that gentleman, I believe, is an outlier. What would really ruin your Thanksgiving if somebody gets sick and God forbid, dies. So we got to do everything we can. But there's a huge amount of burden here on personal responsibility and doing the right thing.
Well, that's what the reliance has to be. By the way, in Oregon, violators of what is called the freeze and its restrictions could face up to 30 days in jail. How safe is jail from coronavirus infection? I don't know the answer to that. Could face up to 30 days in jail and a $1,250 fine. $1,250 fine or both. Look, one of the interesting things is the New York Times over the weekend ran one of these huge studies that they do from time to time. And they were actually kind of surprised. I was actually kind of surprised to see that they were trying to see if there was a correlation between the strictness of state lockdown procedures and how tough the governors and the authorities were from state to state. For instance, Hawaii, I think everybody knows, one of the toughest states. It has been. And Hawaii has very, very low rate of infection from COVID-19. Now, here is what they found. They found that generally states with the toughest restrictions had the lowest rates of infection. States with the lightest restrictions, a lot of the states in the Midwest, places like Christie Noem, South Dakota, they're having a really tough time. And it's painful and deadly and punishing because there weren't enough restrictions. Washington State, interestingly, is placed in the middle. Even though we were one of the first states to put on those restrictions, we are in the middle. But we're actually doing better than that. We're doing more like one of the states with very tight restrictions, at least according to the New York Times. And why would that be? I mean, I think maybe I can figure it out. And it has something to do with, well, we'll get to that. And more. We'll also be talking about the Washington State situation and what you should do for Thanksgiving and much, much more coming up on the MedVed Show. And on the Michael Medved show, some breaking news, which I find an enormous relief. And I think the Wall Street, unless I miss my guess, is also going to find it an enormous relief. The president-elect Joe Biden has announced not only, you probably heard over the weekend, he's picked his national security advisor and the incoming Secretary of State. And he's picked his UN ambassador and more. He just announced, according to the Wall Street Journal, the plans to nominate a Treasury secretary. Now, there'd been lots and lots of talk about, oh, Elizabeth Warren or even Bernie Sanders as the Treasury secretary. I told you why Elizabeth Warren won't be on that list. And the same goes for Bernie Sanders, by the way. Right now, the Senate's going to be very closely divided, regardless of whether the Republicans win in Georgia, and I ardently hope that they do. I think everybody should do everything they can to support Kelly Loeffler and to support David Perdue. But even if they win, the Senate's going to be very closely divided. And the Democrats do not want Joe Biden to hand the Republicans two more Senate seats. What am I talking about? Vermont, believe it or not, has a Republican governor, Phil Scott. So if Bernie Sanders gets appointed to anything in the Biden nomination, boom, there's another U.S. senator who's a Republican. Phil Scott just won re-election with 65% of the vote. Can you believe that? Can you believe that in Vermont? And guess what? A Republican governor in Massachusetts. If he appoints Elizabeth Warren to anything, boom, get ready for a new Republican U.S. senator. Now, probably won't be a conservative Republican U.S. senator, but it'd be a Republican and be on the Republican side of things, a moderate Republican U.S. senator. And by the way, there's rumors that Charlie Baker could even appoint himself the governor of Massachusetts, who is by kind of a long shot right now, the most popular governor in the country. So, with all of that, the Treasury Secretary was not going to be Elizabeth Warren, was not going to be Bernie Sanders. It is going to be Janet Yellen. Remember her? She was the Federal Reserve Chair, and she did a terrific job. She did for the economy. She is not some kind of crazy progressive. She is someone who is, I think, going to help lead to a little bit more seriousness about budgetary matters so that we don't have more years of a more than $1 trillion deficit. And by the way, before the pandemic, we were facing a $1 trillion deficit. And what I love to see is there are a whole series of articles about how frustrated progressives are by how moderate, even conservative, Biden's appointments have been so far. That, it seems to me, is good news. I was also mentioning the good news that, at least according to the New York Times analysis, the state of Washington tends to do better than you would expect because we have not had the strictest lockdowns in the country. We've been right in the middle. We haven't had the loosest. We haven't had the strictest. More or less in the middle. But we do pretty well when it comes to the rate of infection and the rate of death in the state. Now, part of it is our outstanding medical care facilities, led, of course, by Evergreen Medical Center, which has a strong connection with this show. The strong connection being rock star Greg Tomlin is the son of the great physician and American leader who's CEO of that facility. And I acknowledge that. But that's part of it. But there's another part of it, which is, and it goes into the very essence of what George Stephanopoulos was talking about with the governor of New Jersey, trying to make this, I think, embarrassing point that, hey, we should get police to crack down on people who are not observing the restrictions or the shutdowns. Of course you shouldn't. It shouldn't be a police matter. But I think in Washington, one of the things that we noticed when we were up here, and everybody notices when they first move here, especially if you move here from California, as lots of people have done, we moved in 1996. And my wife was the first one to notice it, but then I noticed it too. People wait at four-way stops. People are kind of nice. I know they say Minnesota nice, and they were all talking about it until the riots exploded in Minnesota this summer. But there's also been sort of a Seattle nice. I mean, people are not quite as rude and crazy and nasty as they are in other parts of the country. And I do think that people who live in the state of Washington are a little bit more likely, say, than the people who live in Florida or the people who live in New York City. When they lay down some rules and they say, this is what you need to do for your own health, people do it. Or at least a lot of people do it. And you don't need to have the police come over and bust you because, look, I know that most of the people who are listening to me right now understand that they're trying to make these rules to get us through a difficult period. And one of the great things about the vaccine news that the president announced with such understandable enthusiasm was that actually this is going to be a finite experience. It's not going to go on forever. We're not living in the new normal. We're going to get through this. And no, it won't be done in time for Christmas. And no, it probably won't be done entirely in time for Easter, but it should be shortly after that. Things should begin getting back down to normal, especially with the vaccines. And here's what the vaccine czar, whose name is Dr. Moncef Slowey, said to Jake Tapper on CNN. This is cut six. Listen.
I have to say the operation has operated in, you know, full speed, based on science, focusing on patients and people's need, no political interference, no bureaucracy, no red tape. It's been just an incredible visionary approach to put together science and the Department of Defense and industry and in an incredible partnership. Frankly, it's been exceptional.
Okay, that is great to hear. And of course, it is a wonderful tribute to President Trump and Vice President Pence and the other people involved with Operation Warp Speed and with the Coronavirus Task Force. So what about the state of Washington? The Center for the Environment, the state of Washington, for the Washington Policy Center is directed by Todd Myers. He has a terrific piece that he's just posted that we're going to talk about where we're doing okay and where we're failing with this current and forthcoming lockdowns in this holiday season. Todd Myers of the WPC Washington Policy Center coming right up.
Your outlet for outrage.
I'm not going to take this anymore.
The Michael Medved Show.
Nobody loves a lockdown, particularly in the midst of holiday season with Thanksgiving coming up later this week. So how could the state of Washington do it better? The best person I know of to talk to about that is Todd Myers, who is the Center for the Environment director at the Washington Policy Center. And he wrote a piece that is so smart and so fair and so realistic that I hope you'll take a look at it at michaelmedved.com. Todd, the thing that I appreciate most is you're not saying that a lockdown is unnecessary. It's needed. It's important. It's life-saving. But how could it be done better than it is? That's the real question. I appreciate your coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I think COVID is serious. I have a couple of family members who have it. They are actually younger than me, and they are not enjoying it. They say it's very rough. And I am worried about my parents and others who are older, who are much more susceptible to it. The key problem with lockdowns is, one, the harm that it's doing economically, and I think that in Washington State, we weren't prepared for that, which is a real problem. But also, we don't have any options because government has failed to prepare for this moment. You know, in March, I think it was acceptable that the only tool that we had was a lockdown because we didn't understand the illness. We didn't understand a lot of things about it. But here we are in November, and the fact that we're doing literally the same thing that we did in March and have learned almost nothing and have not prepared to do something more targeted, I think is a real failure. And that, I think, is the biggest problem with where we are today.
Well, you talk about testing and tracing, which obviously are very much needed. Why are we lagging in that regard?
Well, early on, we in Washington State failed to increase our testing. In fact, our testing was actually declining when neighboring states like Oregon and California were increasing. And the problem with that is that if you don't have testing, you don't know where the virus is. You don't know what's spreading it. And you're flying blind. And as long as you're flying blind, the only option you have is to do really serious economic restrictions. And what ended up happening is that they, in Washington State, because we didn't have good testing data, the governor did things like shut down private construction, but not government construction. Well, that's ludicrous because construction itself doesn't care whether it's government or private. And so politics started making our decisions. We ended up actually increasing our testing, and we have a higher level of testing now. But we still don't have enough, and the evidence is that the governor has actually told people, don't get a test unless you have symptoms, because we don't have the testing capacity. So we have talked long and hard about how there would be another wave, and we don't seem to be prepared for it now, to the extent of people who are asymptomatic and maybe spreading it without knowing it can't get a test to stop that spread. So again, it is a lack of preparation for the most basic things that is causing us to have to tell people ultimately cancel Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas because we're just not prepared for it.
Okay, so aside from the whole idea of canceling Christmas, which I can't imagine that they actually are going to do, but do you think that the Thanksgiving restrictions that they're suggesting, keeping it to a small dinner with spaces at the table, with people from the same household gathered, but not a whole bunch of outsiders, do you think that's reasonable?
I think that the more people you have inside who have come, you know, who have potentially had contact with others, the more risk you take. One of my friends recently was infected by one of their family members who came over to visit. That can happen. There is no question about it. But I think that if the government is saying, you know, have set up a snitch line, which they have, to say, you know, call people you see violating it and we'll send the police, I think that's outrageous. I think people
is
need to be
very
careful.
Is that here in Washington, too, not just Oregon? Because we played Kate Brown before, the governor of Oregon, and I know they're encouraging people to snitch. And they're encouraging that here in the state of Washington, too?
They did, just as they did earlier this year, told people to snitch on businesses. And so they are telling people, if you see people violating the rule, to do that. I think that's totally outrageous. But it doesn't mean that there isn't risk when you bring people together and that you need to be very, very careful. So I think both of those things can be true at the same time. You can be very upset by government overreach, which I am, while also recognize that there is a risk and that you need to be careful.
What would be an example of an element of this current wave of lockdowns that you, Todd Myers, of the Washington Policy Center, think is just unnecessary?
Well, I think it is wise to say, be careful. I do not think it is wise to say it is illegal for you to have people come and visit. I think that's ridiculous. I think we have seen the restrictions on funerals, but not restrictions on other activities. I think the fact that people are allowed to go out and celebrate or, you know, Biden's victory or protest because they're wearing masks, I think is ludicrous. We know that there is strong circumstantial, albeit, but strong evidence that the protests this summer caused a spike in cases in cities in Washington state. The data clearly show that right after that, the numbers went up in cities, but not in rural areas. So a mask is not a silver bullet for the people who say, well, I wore a mask. So I think that's the problem I have, is that some areas are very strict and some areas are not.
Do you know what, assuming, as looks like a very good shot, the Seahawks are actually in the playoffs, and they should be, are we planned to have it sort of be crowd-free games again in the playoffs? Is that going to continue?
It looks like it probably is. Interestingly, the UK is going to announce that they're going to allow 4,000 people per game for Premier League soccer games, probably starting next month. So the UK is starting to move to where you can have crowds, and I know in other states they have had small crowds allowed. That's probably not going to be true here in Washington State based on where we are.
Let's hope, first of all, that the Seahawks do well and do get in the playoffs, and maybe they relax that a little bit. Does the governor listen at all, or is there sort of the arrogance of power? I mean, he won an easy reelection. Is he paying attention to some of the thoughtful points that are raised by Washington Policy Center?
I think he has not listened even to his own party, and I think the evidence of that is the fact that he won't call a special session. Virtually every other state in the country has had a session or a special session during the pandemic. Washington State has not, which is interesting because his own party controls both chambers. You would think that he would be comfortable with that. He apparently is not. He did change his position about giving more relief, financial relief, to businesses in Washington State after bipartisan legislators came together and said, you need to do this. But again, it was a week after he announced the restrictions. He seems to have not have planned for this or thought about it. And the other irony is that it was money not from the state budget, but from the federal budget that had already been given in the CARES Act earlier this year. So apparently they had more than $100 million still sitting in state control that they hadn't planned on giving to businesses, while at the same time complaining that the federal government hasn't given them more money. And it's shocking to me that they would complain that the federal government wasn't providing them with additional resources to help businesses when they weren't even offering the money that they had on hand. So I think
what an excellent point. Todd Myers of Washington Policy Center, his piece on the latest lockdowns is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. Go there, read it, and find out more about this great state resource, the WPC Washington Policy Center. We will be right back. On the Michael Medved show, there's lots of serious issues that we're addressing right now. And they include settling this election finally and maybe getting some cooperation from the Trump administration, from the General Services Administration, to actually help transition the Biden team into taking over in January, which they will, with cooperation or without. It's the law. It's the Constitution. And we have a problem of a looming government shutdown. We have a problem of trying to get some kind of COVID-19 relief, because it's going to be a ways before those vaccines kick in and people can go back to normal. And the level of economic suffering and hardship is very, very real. Now, with all that going on, it's amazing to me that we still have people on the left who want to focus on the issue of trans rights. You would think that we've come a long way. They had a big story last couple of days about a woman named Lynn Conway. And I say a woman, she is someone who transitioned into being a female way back in 1968. Okay, 52 years ago. She's in her 80s now. And she was a very promising computer scientist at IBM, and then she was fired because she confided to her bosses that she was going to transition from male to female, and they fired her, and now they are giving her awards, a Lifetime Achievement Award, trying to make it up to her, and she's gotten an honorary degree from the University of Michigan, and she's being honored a great deal. Okay. I understand, and it sounds like this is somebody who has led a productive and happy life, and more power to her, and I'm glad that she's been able to find that there is life after transitioning and life after IBM. Okay, with all of that, there's right now this gigantic effort to attack someone who was a beloved figure and who has actually sent out a tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
Okay. The tweet comes from John Cleese, who is considered something of an international treasure. He's one of the founding members of Monty Python's Flying Circus. He, a Fawlty Tower, as you may remember. My wife used to love that series years ago. John Cleese has stood up for J.K. Rowling. John Cleese is not a conservative. He is on the left. He is English. And he sent out the following tweet. And, of course, people are now calling for him to be canceled, which emphatically is the wrong approach. John Cleese tweeted, "I'm afraid I'm not that interested in trans folks. I just hope they're happy and that people treat them kindly. Right now, I'm more focused on threats to democracy in America, the rampant corruption in the United Kingdom, the appalling British press, the revelations about police brutality," and then on and on. Is that fair enough? I mean, honestly, it's a tremendous priority with all of the progress that has been made in acceptance and understanding, and some of it seems to me going too far. I don't believe that the American people should be compelled through Obamacare, as we are, to pay for a gender confirmation surgery or treatment or hormones, as we are compelled right now. I think it's ridiculous that for prisoners who are serving life sentences, that if they want to transition and... I mean, if you're serving a life sentence, who wouldn't, right? I mean, I shouldn't even joke about that. It's a terrible thing. But we've had court cases, one in Massachusetts, where the judges compel the state to pay for all that. And gender reassignment surgery, gender confirmation surgery can be $500,000. It's a great deal of money. But to now be going after John Cleese because he says, "I'm afraid I'm not that interested in trans folks," seems to me to be utterly inappropriate and a grotesque overreaction. Speaking of grotesque overreactions, there was the Reverend William Barber, who's a regular on MSNBC. This is clip number 5. Basically is not wanting to let go, even after the election results, even with a change in leadership in Washington. He still wants to talk about crimes against humanity from President Trump and one of his prominent Republican allies. Listen.
You know, one of the terrible things is that Trump and McConnell and those following them are really committing crimes against humanity. This is tremendously immoral, and we've not had any time of national mourning.
Okay, crimes against humanity and a time of national mourning? How is Mitch McConnell? In other words, it's not Mitch McConnell's job to coordinate a federal approach to the pandemic. And do I think that President Trump did a flawless, outstanding, top-flight job on handling the pandemic? Well, he did on helping to get a vaccine, which was important. That's good. But other aspects of the pandemic, no, there was no consistency. There was no clarity. It was a bit of a mess. But that's not a crime against humanity, is it? Mike Pence had something to say at the very end of last week about where we are going in terms of the tests and the vaccines and more. This would be clip 7.
General Perna and his team have been working literally around the clock to build the distribution plan that you see that's in effect. And I hope you all heard that. I asked him how many of those kits have already been manufactured for merging with the Moderna product, and they've already assembled 100 million kits that are ready to go. And that's the supplies that are necessary for administering the vaccine. I must tell you, having received my latest briefing today over at FEMA from Operation Warp Speed, I think every American can be proud of the fact that we have a plan in place, that the moment that the FDA concludes that that vaccine is safe and effective, we have a system in place to begin within 24 hours shipping that vaccine to hospitals, healthcare facilities, and 24 hours after that, literally injecting that vaccine into Americans.
Okay, look, this is all good news. I hope that Mike Pence can prevail upon the President of the United States to try to work with the incoming administration on getting this done, because right now the continued squabbling today, probably during the show, and I'll be very glad to announce it when the news comes, they're going to be certifying the vote in probably both Pennsylvania and Michigan. That's the deadline is today, it's tonight, and they're expecting within the next couple of hours, and every indication is that the remaining problems in Michigan are going away. Look, we're going to have a new administration, and the president isn't doing his historical position. He isn't doing the Republican Party. He isn't doing those two crucial candidates in Georgia, both of them good candidates, Senator Kelly Loeffler and Senator David Perdue. They need support, because we need a Republican Senate. And we need a Republican Senate because the bulk of American people actually recognize that divided government is a better idea than handing everything to the Democrats. We will get to that. We will also get to the latest strategy. The strategy of getting legislatures to go around the Electoral College, basically, by nominating their own slates of electors. Can that work? We'll talk to Andrew McCarthy and more in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.